My guest today is Harry Connick Jr., the multi-talented boy wonder you've been seeing and hearing on records, radio, TV, and the movies. But I saw him first at the Knickerbocker, didn't I, Harry?
That's right, Marion.
Well, almost first. Almost. There must have been about 10,000 other people watching
you. Let's just say for public record that you were the first one, because I remember doing your show a couple of years ago was the first time anybody had really had me on a show for doing what I love to do the best, and that's play the piano.
You know, it's funny. I keep opening magazines, and I think, well, there just couldn't be a piece about Harry Connick in this magazine. Sure enough, I open up Esquire magazine, and there you are, sartorially elegant in about six different suits.
That's right.
No, it was terrific. And I mean, you looked good, and the suits looked
Thank
great.
You.
So I thought, well, all right, that's next. So I haven't picked up a magazine in a couple of days, but it's much better because here you are in person. So now I can just start quizzing you all over again and going back to the early days in New Orleans. And was Ellis Marsalis your first teacher?
He was the first formal jazz teacher that I had. I had been playing piano for a long time, and I met Ellis when I was about 13. Well, I had met him a long time before that, but I started studying with him when I was about 13 or 14. And he was the one who sort of showed me that there was other types of piano playing besides Dixieland, which is pretty much all I was doing, and some New Orleans piano things. He showed me about bebop and Thelonious Monk and people like that. So he was my first real jazz teacher.
Well, it's funny because they talk about New Orleans being, you know, the cradle of jazz and everything. But when you get right down to it, traditional and old-time music is really all you hear. I mean, it's hard to get to hear those other people, like some bebop players, the Thelonious Monk,
That's
actually
right.
in New Orleans, isn't it?
It surely is. I think Ellis was probably the only piano player down there. There's a couple of others, but he was certainly the most visible playing something other than Dixieland piano. In fact, I don't even know if Ellis can play Dixieland piano.
He probably can't.
You know, I've never actually heard of him working on Bourbon Street, but he's such a remarkable musician that and it makes you realize what a great town New Orleans is. But it was, when I was growing up, predominantly Dixieland music, so he certainly broadened my horizons musically.
Well, you know, I've got so many things I want to talk to you about, but before we go any further, I'd just love to hear you play something.
Okay.
I was down at the Vanguard, and I heard you do a bunch of your own pieces, so how about doing one of those for us?
Okay, this number is called Hudson Bomber. Hope you like this, Mary.
Oh, I know I will.
Okay.
It's a neat bass line.
Yeah, isn't that fun?
It's fun, but, you know, I don't know if you meant to, but it's kind of monkish, isn't it?
Well, you know, I find that when I write and when I play, I try to get something specific out of the piano, and I try to get something specific out of my compositions. And I don't listen to very much Monk. I went through a period about 3 or 4 years ago when I listened to Monk all the time. But I listen to Frank Sinatra all the time now. So I guess some of that influence that Monk had on me is certainly embedded in my compositional and playing style. But it's not intentional by any means, you know.
Oh, I know. It's not as if you were copying him, but there's something there that makes you know he was an influence.
Yeah, absolutely.
But those bass lines are nice. I remember all those tunes I heard you play. They all had these wild sort of turning back on themselves kind of very interesting. Well, when you were back there studying with LSD, I mean, did you sort of have dreams about you were going to be in show business? And did it, any of these things that are happening, did you think they might happen at that time? Or?
I grew up in sort of two environments. One was the musical one, where I saw people like Ellis performing and playing music all the time. And then I grew up with my parents, who were both politicians, who would speak at these large...
That's right. Your father's the DA, isn't he?
That's right. And my mother was a judge. So they would speak at political rallies in front of thousands upon thousands of people many, many times. And I would see that. And I think somehow in my head I said, I want to do both of those things. I want to have all of those people. I want to know what it's like. I want to say, hello, my name's Harry Connick Jr., shake their hand and meet them, and then, which is not typical of a jazz musician. And then I wanted to know what it was like to do something artistic in front of masses. I just, for me, that's, I went through a period of my life where I was trying to put my ideals on other people, and now I think I've come to a point where I'm doing what makes me happy, and I'm certainly not, I don't feel like I'm doing anything wrong or hurting anyone. So I'm really enjoying myself, and I hope that other people are too.
Well, you know, you can do something to make me happy, and you can do that thing I first heard you do on, I guess, your first record date, and it was Green Dolphin Street.
Okay.
Will you play that?
Yes, I surely will.
It's probably not the way you did it then.
We'll see. I haven't played it since then.
You haven't?
No.
All right. Actually, did you yourself go to George Butler at Columbia Records? Did you really do that?
Well, we met when I was 14 in Kansas City. And he said, when you come to New York, give me a call. So I called him and called him and called him for a long time and to no response. So finally, he called me back and said, I'd like to meet with you. So I went up to the office and met a number of times until he signed me up.
And that was the first record for Columbia had that Green Dolphin Street on it.
That's right.
And then the second one, that's when you got into singing?
Well, no, I have been into singing for a long time, but I wanted to sort of establish myself as a pianist first, because no matter what, the first thing that people see you do is the thing that they associate you with, which is what I found. And then when you do something else, that's always... secondary, even if it becomes more popular. And now what I've found, I'm glad I did that because now my singing is long overshadowed my piano playing. But the fact is that people still somehow know that I'm a piano player, even if they've never heard my piano playing because I mention it or whatever, but because of my first album, I think.
Well, and you keep on playing. I mean, some piano players get sidetracked. I mean, when you think of Nat Cole, what a fabulous pianist he was. And mm-hmm. They kind of told him to be a stand-up singer, and you didn't. No, a lot of people don't realize what a fabulous piano player he was. So
was he?
I hope you're not going to do that. Well, obviously you're not, because everything you're doing has your piano playing
right.
in it.
Well, some things, that's why I like releasing two albums, one with just the piano and one with just the... singing, because I think it separates the two. And there's a lot of people who simply don't like jazz and they like the singing. And there's a lot of people who like it. I mixed it up. Some people like jazz and don't like singing, and some people like the singing and don't like the jazz. So I think it's important to keep the two separate to a certain degree.
Well, you're pretty lucky to be able to do that, I must say. Well, you know what would be fun would be if you would sing.
Okay.
And if you trust me, let me play something behind you.
I'd be honored. I'd be honored.
Well, how would we do this? Can we do it? Do you want to do it slow or?
Yeah, let's try it nice and slow first, and then you can kick off a little tempo, and then I'll sing the second part a little faster, and then you can go ahead and play.
Okay.
I'm thrilled to death. Boy, Mary McPartland's playing behind me. I can't believe it.
Come on, Harry. Don't give me the old business.
To hear the full broadcast, tune in next week to your NPR station or visit our website, pianojazz.npr.org. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the National Endowment for the Arts, the Friends of Piano Jazz, and NPR. The digital archiving of this program was made possible in part by Save America's Treasures through a partnership between the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Park Service Department of the Interior.